Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us on Sedona Talk Radio and on Blog Talk Internet Radio streaming live today. Thank you so much for being with us today. And as I always start out the show, we always have a little bit of weather information. Don't forget, I live here in the Deep South, and if you hear a whole lot of noise, that's just thunder. It is incredibly stormy today, and it just comes and goes. You could stand on one corner and you'd be soaking wet. You can go half a block down the street and they don't even have any water. So, hey, we're just going to go on with the show, and it'll be a great show. Today, Mike, oh, did you hear that one? That gave me chills.
Wow. Wow, that was beautiful.
Yeah. Well,
wow, I heard that.
That was an introduction to Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. I guess you don't need an introduction. You just brought yourself on with a thunderclap, right?
Wow, that is awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you.
Thank you. Wasn't that crazy? I have chills.
Oh, that's going to be a wonderful conversation.
Absolutely.
It starts out with a bang.
That's right. Well, you know, today we wanted to talk about your book, The Five Levels of Attachment, Tolic Wisdom for the Modern World. But let me tell you, you know, I love the book because I can tell you within my past probably 10 years or so, I've really hit the ground. And I mean, I just camped out, took the road, stayed home, did nothing, and said, what is this world all about? It is really messed up. Something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have these books. You know, I didn't connect with a lot of this, and I really did feel alone. So I think there's a lot of people like that these days. So would you mind if you could tell us a little bit of even how you even got started to even think about this? I mean, I know it's in your family, but I really think it's been in history and society, things are rapidly changing. What do you think?
Well, I think so too. It's been dramatically changing since it's been become a lot easier to communicate with one another. The fact that you're in New Orleans and I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah at the very moment and talking in a matter of seconds has allowed us to share information in a much faster rate. When I was young, my grandmother had a small little temple in San Diego and shared with her community this tradition. And then when my father came in, you can say in the mid-1980s, it was basically word of mouth. Everything was word of mouth. And I can say that one of the things that, here, at least in the States, I think the whole shift really began sometime in the 1950s and 60s with the beatnik generation beginning to see a different way of thinking, and then the 60s happened, and there was not only a political revolution, but a spiritual revolution. And slowly, progressively, from those days of the 60s, has been to, if you fast forward to the 2000s, what was just specifically for a small group, it has become something that we can hear about it in the Oprah Winfrey Show, at the Dr. Oz, in a magazine, and it's a beautiful thing. And one of the things that's expedited this ability is now we're no longer searching for this book or this teacher that is obscure. We basically can get on Google and start searching it. You know, it's still word of mouth,
right.
And that's the beauty of it. It's still word of mouth. People sharing, hey, have you read this book? Have you heard of this idea? Have you heard of Yogananda? Have you heard of Buddha? Have you heard of all of these beautiful traditions? And all of a sudden, you get to see the traditions that humanity has manifested throughout the millenniums. It's a wonderful thing. We get to hear and learn from India, we get to hear and learn from Asia, from the Midwest, from the East Coast, from Europe, to South America, I remember the days when my stepmom, who also is from New Orleans, Amamagaya, you know, she would meet someone and she would, a teacher from who's a Native American, and she would call over friends and have a little class in the living room of the house, and we got to meet new people. Well, and today it's just a keystroke away, a conversation away. Our conversation right now is the result of someone searching. You know, like before Hermann Hesse wrote about Siddhartha, and many people saw that as something so exotic. Now we can understand and engage a tradition and start seeing it in our everyday life. It stops being something that is foreign. It starts being something practical in our life. And to me, that's the key, that it's no longer isolated. We can engage in a conversation about it, and that's beautiful.
Well, you know, I also see, too, that as I always relate history myself, too, with a topic, and I see that potentially I'm almost 60, so I see this age group, you know, 50s and 60s, as people mm-hmm. who were born as seeds. So in other words, mm-hmm. we all were of a different time, of a different era. You know, like in the 50s and 60s when I grew up, we were given a book. We were told, you know, you have to get a job, you have to do this, you have to go to college, you have to, all that stuff, right? I can remember being drilled in my head, nobody is your friend, nobody is over you, you are over them, you are more, you know, that whole scenario.
Yeah.
But, and then when you go through the decades, you could see how that has lessened up to a bit. And there are people who are sticking to that dogma, but there are people who are mm-hmm. not. And they've kind of filtered into the background like people like myself. So really mm-hmm. what I do see is over the decades is a relationship of your five levels of attachment. So people like mm-hmm. in my age group have gone through those. In the 50s, 60s, and 70s, we were in phase one, you know, I mean, in your fifth attachment, you know. In the next decade, it was the fourth. And the next was the third. And you know, so we kind of have moved up. Where some of the younger ones have pretty much been born into it, it's a little easier. And I do have to say this, it was absolutely incredible. When I read your book, and of course I always ask for print books from authors for a specific reason, because I go through and I write through in them and everything and all. Well, anyway, you know, I had gotten to almost the last pages, I think. It's like 138, and it says, I am on there. Do you know, and I had said this to the listeners, I think, another time, I was redoing my websites, and I was having such a difficult time this past 2 years of re-identifying. I just says all of this stuff isn't working, and you know who mm-hmm. or what or and all that. And I sat down and I said, okay, I have to write a bio, and all I wrote was the words "I am" on the page. I could mm-hmm. not, for the life of me, get past that. And I sat like that for 2 months, and so then I started to write something down anyway and pulled some old stuff and gave it to the PR person. She says, I don't know what to do with this stuff. And it was like, finally, fine, don't change it. So I left the old stuff on the website because I can't get past the I am. You know, so when people ask you, who are you, it's like, you don't even have an answer anymore. And they said, well, maybe your thoughts aren't formulated yet. And then I just want to take out the book and hit my head and say, that's not what I mean. My thoughts are well-formulated, sweetheart. It's yours, it aren't.
Well, it gets to the point where our who we are, and I have the same problem with my bio. It's basically an introduction for another individual to understand who I am, which is what allows me to finish the bio. But in form to see it for myself, I am an experience. And anything I can describe to you, it might have been true 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago, a week ago, a year ago. And something happens in life and it changes. It changes my whole perception, my whole who I am. And all of a sudden, it's not about a bio, it's about, all right, this is what I'm experiencing right now. And to put it into a bio, it's basically the introduction to someone else to see who I am and understand who I am.
Right.
But as I go beyond that, it's just simply an experience, you know. You can get to know me more about holding my hand or sharing a cup of coffee than a page on a paper, because even the bio that's there now, it's 2 years old, and a lot has happened since. And it's a beautiful thing to have a definition of self as an experience rather than a definition.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when we try to pressure ourselves to put ourselves into those spaces is exactly when, you know, another realization can come forth, too. And you could say, you know, I'm really not that. Oh, look how I have changed, as you've said. You know, you change in an instant. So really, when people ask you these questions, like the lady asked me, and I just went, you know, No, I have the answers. I know what I'm saying, and I know where I'm at, you know, mm-hmm. and it was just their perception of that. And then how do you get, you know, so that's what your book is all about, you know, how do you mm-hmm. move through these phases, 1 through 5, because I think we can go back and forth, you know, in that instance, you probably got to jump down a few steps and maybe give her what yes. she may need or expect, but then you still can keep true to yourself, right?
Yes, and that's the key, because everyone around us is in different stages or different levels of their own attachments, mm-hmm. including myself. I go up and down. I could be totally engaged in my level 2, and then I read something that makes me have an emotional reaction, and I'm all of a sudden back to level right. 4, and I'm like, oh, okay, I caught myself, and I forgive myself, and I start the whole process all over again. And
yeah.
that's the beauty of it. Like, I remember when I was younger, when I first started this whole work, it was supposed to be, I have to live up to this image. I have to live up to this expectation. I have to reach right. that. As soon as everything will be easy. And as I've engaged the tradition and engaged spirituality or in any kind of discipline, my sense of my capabilities shift continuously. And that's mm-hmm. and that's the beauty. So when I engage someone and share the words I use, I'm basically using knowledge to express what I'm perceiving in myself in life, but knowing that the knowledge that I'm sharing can shift at any given moment, and that's beauty. To me, that's just beauty, because it's life.
And you know, it's so interesting, because I think, as I've reflected, I always share my point of view on the show. I think the listeners always send me emails afterwards and says that this helps correlate. But what I've noticed is that over the past 10 years, you know, I noticed more and more people drifting away, because they said my ideals or what I believed or my thoughts of you of what I expected from you, you didn't do or you didn't fulfill. Therefore, uh-huh. you are no longer as perfect as I expected, and you either uh-huh. need to come up to my standards or do what I told you to do, or else uh-huh. then you get all kinds of negative stuff. And I think that's right yeah. now where a lot of people are, because right now mm-hmm. is the crisis point. I almost feel like we're at a tipping point where people are going to say, you know what, that's crap. You know, and mm-hmm. how can yeah. we finally stand up into our own shoes? In other words, before I almost felt like we were wearing flip-flops. We weren't quite sturdy in our walk. And
yes.
right now is the time to get sturdy in that, to say to those people, like I was saying to the woman, you know, hey, it's all about you, sorry, you know, but and
yeah.
just be able to be stronger in ourselves, don't you think? And that's where your book really helps
yeah.
people to do.
Yeah, I totally agree, because, you know, I use this example of myself as Tommy Garvish Jr. I'm not supposed to take things personal. I'm always not supposed to make assumptions. Always do my best and be impeccable with my word. If I don't live up to one of them, I can completely reject myself. How can I call myself mm-hmm. Don Miguel Ruiz Jr.? And what happens is that I'm domesticating myself to this image. I'm domesticating myself to live up to it. And mind you, domestication is a system of reward and punishment by which we model the behavior of an individual. If they
right.
live up to the expectation, they're worthy of the reward, which is acceptance, which is,
right.
since we're emotional beings, that feels like love. And if we don't live up to it, then we're worthy of the punishment. So it's conditional love. Which is to
mm-hmm.
me level 4, the internalization. We internalize this image, this identity, and if we live up to it, then we accept ourselves as perfection through the eyes of a judge.
Mm-hmm.
And perfection is something that is completely free of any flaw. But here's the key. We define what a flaw is. So we're basically punishing ourselves and judging ourselves to live up to an image that doesn't exist. For example, Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. doesn't exist. I do
mm-hmm.
think things personal. I do make assumptions. I sometimes don't do my best, and sometimes I'm not impeccable with my word. Just ask my wife. She's my witness.
Mm-hmm.
But,
right.
And that's the thing. It's like I accept myself for who I am, but I can use the 4 agreements, because when I use the 4 agreements to domesticate myself, I turn them into the 4 conditions of my personal freedom, and people can domesticate me to that 4 conditions and expect me to live up to this image of Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., but that's an illusion. That guy doesn't exist. Who exists is Miguel Ruiz Jr., and I can add it on if I wanted to. And any given moment, I am free to take personal or not personal, but I've learned to use it as an instrument to influence my choices. Not to take it personal, I understand it, and I know that it's a choice, and it's me when I say yes, I will not take it personal, I've made an agreement. And an agreement is just the action of saying yes. So if I become aware that people can try to domesticate me to live up to their image, the projected image of me, of Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., then I'm always going to be subject to someone else's point of view. My happiness will always be subject to someone else's opinion. But if I'm aware that people do that, and I forgive them, and I know that in the end it's me who controls, then just like an alcoholic or drug addict that says, my name is so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic, my name is Miguel Ruiz Jr., and I do those things. I do take those things personal, but that is the stepping stone to change. That is the stepping stone of accepting the truth. I can't change the world pretending to be something I am not. And that's the key. So I totally understand that what you're saying.
So you can respect that that's their point of view, but you don't have to internalize it, correct? And in other words, you
exactly.
don't have to keep that baggage on your derriere. That's what I always tell the listeners.
Exactly.
How much are you going to carry around?
Yeah, because and that carrying around and that derriere, basically, it's conditional love. If I allow them to tell me that I can only love myself conditionally, living up to that image, then I'm rejecting myself. I can only accept myself in those moments that I live up to the expectation. And that's the motivator. Conditional love is the motivator. And unfortunately, it subjugates my free will. It subjugates who I am. But if I know who I am, and this living being, who I am is not a definition. Who I am is not the son of Don Miguel Ruiz or anyone. I'm a living being. From the moment I am born to the moment I die, I will perceive life from this point of view, and I've got a lot of life to be lived between now and my moment of death. And I choose to love myself unconditionally, which simply means I accept myself just the way I am, and which allows me to love people around me just as the way they are, or I can love myself conditionally, thus I'll love everyone else in my life conditionally. That's the core choice, because if I love myself conditionally, then I've got nothing but conditional love to give, and I'm always at odds with the world. I'm always in a battle of who is going to impose whose will onto who. But if
right.
I accept
whose conditions
myself unconditionally,
are bigger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if I accept myself as I am, then I see everyone as a living being. Whether they love me conditionally or unconditionally, they're a living being, and they're expressing their life from the point of view that they see it. Sometimes they see me, and sometimes they don't. They only see what they want to see. And it's up to me whether I take that personally or not.
And you can't be responsible either for how they perceive, because they're the ones that carry their filter, right?
Yeah, exactly. I only control to the tips of my fingers. When I say my words, I'm responsible for them, but I'm not responsible for what people hear, because in their mind, what I say is interpreted in their own unique way, and because they've lived life as unique as they have lived it. And I have no control whether to say, Miguel, I agree with you, Miguel, I don't agree with you. I have no control of that, and that's what keeps me humble. That's what I celebrate. I do not control the will of any other individual in the world except mine, and I'm responsible for my own free will.
Absolutely. Well, can you tell us a little bit, will you run through just as a clip of the five levels, and then we'll talk about each, as they perceive. Go ahead.
Sure. So I'll start from the beginning of the level one. And just imagine a flower, since we have a short version. Imagine a flower that's completely open, we call awareness. Level one is the authentic self. The flower is completely open because I know I'm alive. At level two, the flower closes for a brief moment because I'm engaging something in life, which is preference. Level two, preference. I've gone in the direction in life, and I've engaged it. And when the moment is over, the flower opens up again. So it's a pulsating flower with every moment I have, one and two. at level 3, identity. I attach myself to knowledge based on the identity of my preference. So the flower closes but doesn't open when the moment is over. I've used this engagement, this moment that I've engaged, to define who I am, my identity. At level 4, internalization, the flower closes even more, and I begin to domesticate myself with this identity. Thus, I internalize this identity. I internalize my beliefs, my ideas. At level 5, fanaticism, the flower's completely closed, and my free will is completely subjugated to my beliefs. My beliefs control my yes and my no, which is my free will, which is no longer free. It's automatic.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's work our way back up from 5, because
yep.
I think that's where we want to see. We don't want to see, we want to see how we can get to those different phases going the other way. So
yeah,
I think a lot of times, right? I think a lot of times, like when I look at number 5, I kind of think of it as a puzzle, and you know, the puzzle, you are a piece, and that just is the way of the world, and that's the way it's going to be, and period, right? Is that maybe how you might see it? Because you're seeing it through the voice of, like the narrator, you wrote as the voice of the narrators. It's a story, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody has their place and their lines, and this is just the way it is. And so we could reflect this back to maybe how things were in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s.
Yeah, but basically at level 5 with fanaticism, my favorite example is Don Quixote de la Mancha. Don Quixote, he has all these books that tell him how he should live life, and everyone, he can't have a free thought because unless it comes from that book. So his own free will, his mind that can think of so many glorious things, where he sees giants, he sees Dulcinea and a beautiful horse named Rocinante, he doesn't see life as is. He only sees what he wants to see. So the fanaticism is, I'm so attached to my belief that I want the whole world to fit my definition of how the world should be, including the people I love and myself.
Yeah, and that's pretty difficult, too, because I know with relationships and stuff, you know, people are saying, I've got this checklist and you best fit it. And the second you stray, you know, hey, it's here's the door. And a lot of people have lived life that way, don't you think?
Yeah, and they're used to it. It's what we know as conditional love. So you can say that the opposite of love is love, or more simply, the opposite of unconditional love, which is the expression of the lower levels of attachment, the authentic self, and preference, at level 5 and even 4, it's conditional love, where the punishment is hate and anger. If you don't live up to my image of who I think you should be, then I'm going to punish you with my hatred and my anger. You know, that's why people let go of their children. Oh, if you don't do what I tell you to do, or don't live up to my expectation, I'm going to disinherit you. And I'm doing it for your own good.
You know, I have an entire generations of ancestors that are all living in 4 and 5. And that they just have no reason and no way are they going to move out of that. And, you know, and they're taking it to their death, though. You know, that is what I find is so sad, because no matter what you are around them or otherwise, they just can't see it. And they're taking that suffering that they have internalized, and they're just letting it eat to the core.
Yeah.
And they're going to go with
it. Yeah, because like there's someone asked me, a student once asked me this question, when did we lose sight of our authentic self? And the answer is the moment we prefer the illusion or the lie over the truth. And the reason why we prefer the illusion or the lie is because we feel safe in it. It feels at home. It makes us feel as who we are. And we find the reasons why we should accept ourselves. So we reject life as it is, and we forsake it for an image that allows me to feel safe and comfortable, and I need to defend it. I need to impose it, because as soon as someone else doesn't agree with me, it's threatened, and I can't have that.
Yeah.
So at level 5 fanaticism, I'm not allowing anything to come in and change my mind, because if I change my mind, what's going to happen to me? And you can say people go to war for it. People kill for it, because they don't want to lose that.
You know, I think level five is a lot of abusive people. I work a lot with the domestic violence and groups, and I really find that they really spend most of their life, both the victims and the perpetrators, in level four and five, and they just can't seem to get anywhere else. That is just their paradigm. And, you know, I think it's, it takes generations to come out of that to actually get to level three. And, you know, I know with my own ancestors, you know, there's decades and decades and decades of it, and it has never changed, you know, and how hard to pull out.
And that's the beautiful thing of the time we live in now, because back then it was easy to hide away information. It was easy to create a bubble, but now it's not so easy. It's, you can say that the reason why there's a lot more trolling on the internet or all these negativity thoughts is because the information that we grew up believing, the information is already there to try to shift our perception. You know, you can say that the great distinguishment between level four internalization and level five fanaticism is that they're both an expression of domestication, which is conditional love. At level four, the reward is still the same, love, acceptance. The punishment is rejection, which is a judgment. We judge each other. We judge each other for not living up to our expectation. But at level five, the reward is still the same, but the punishment is that hate, it's that anger, it's that that racism or sexism or homophobia or whatever. It's basically that thing that doesn't allow us to see a human being anymore. We only see the personification of an idea that we don't agree with. And when that happens, it's easy to abuse that person. It's easy to even kill that person because we're not killing a human being. We're killing a symbol, or we're harming a symbol. And that's the thing about fanaticism. At level four, we can begin to see that human side, and we can relent. We can not follow through in that anger. We can hold our fist without having to really deliver it, but it's still there.
I think in level five is you just don't give a rat's hootie about anybody else, and you're just going to be standing in that, and you're going to exile all of those people around you that may believe differently because you are in such fear that they may find out the truth about you, which is you know, maybe a reflection of whatever that might be.
And you hit it right in the nail, because when we talk about other people, no one abuses ourselves more than we abuse ourselves. If we're projecting that kind of hatred or illusion onto the world, imagine what we're doing to ourselves. We can't give what we do not have. If we're giving conditional love to that extreme at level five to the world, imagine what's happening inside our mind. My father put it this way. He says, Miguel, if you're the voice who's talking inside your head, who's listening? I am. I'm the one listening. Well, if I'm the one listening, who's talking? I am. I'm the one talking. It's an internal dialogue with myself. And in that dialogue, in that conversation, that anger that we project onto the people around us is even louder and harsher and even more painful to ourselves, to the point where we're ready to reject ourselves for not living up to expectation. We reject ourselves for not getting that A. We reject ourselves for not looking the way we should look. We become anorexic. When I was younger, I was an anorexic myself. I rejected myself for looking the way I did. And even though I was 15 pounds underweight, I look at myself in the mirror and I still see fat. Nothing but fat. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time to get out of that. But the key there is that we basically self-domesticate. We impose onto ourselves those conditions. We learned it from somewhere outside of us. Someone taught us that. Someone imposed their will onto us, and we believed it, and we ran with it. And that's really the point where we no longer enjoy life, because how can we enjoy life when we're not living up to this condition of love?
You know, and then when you go to level three, what I would see is, think about it as simply as, you know, we hear the comments, you know, we hear what we should be or believe or whatever, but inside we know better, so we just are kind of not really putting up a veil, but we are buffering ourselves. We are saying,
yeah.
I got it. I hear you. Okay, thank you. And letting it just dissipate and dissolve. Is that maybe how it might be?
How I see it, a level three identity is that, you know, for example, we talked about the biography at the beginning of the show and how it was difficult to create one. Well, in that biography, we're putting into knowledge, which is language, our description of ourselves. We're creating an identity that allows everyone else to understand who I am. The difference between level four and five, where I domesticate myself with this image, at level three, I don't domesticate myself with this image. I need to know who I am. That's the only condition we have. I need to know who I am in order to understand myself just as much as I need to know who the people around me, because just as we interact with each other through language, language and I are one. So my identity is just a symbol. My attachment to knowledge is that it allows me to know who I am. And from that point of view, it's like a mask that I project onto the world. And in my case, a mask of Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., so that people know how to understand me, how to relate. Oh, he's the son of Don Miguel, the Four Agreements. Okay, I can follow what he's talking about, and I can relate.
Right.
Or, like, for example, if we're, you know, if we're in a classroom and someone else, hey, I'm a veteran. Hey, I'm a veteran too. Well, that allows us to see how we can relate to each other, like, because we come from the common experience, and that's the key, because the language we use, the conversations we use, they're all through symbols that allows us to share with one another our experience of the world. So the thing, the difference in my point of view of level three with level four and level five is, at level three, the only condition I have in life is to understand who I am. Thus, I need an identity. And I base my identity on the things I engage in life. For example, I can call myself, I'm an author. I can call myself a Toltec. I can call myself a teacher. But I am much more than that. I'm this living being that continuously changes, which is more level two. But at level three, who I am, basically, I can call myself a vegan even when I'm not eating, because I'm identifying myself with this event of eating with vegan food. But even when I'm not eating, I'm still going to call myself a vegan, because it allows me to understand who I am or what I am. From that point of view, I'm just a walking definition.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you in level three, what I see is that's putting more color to the picture. Like level one and two is kind of a creation of that picture, and level four and five is like solidifying it in stone and like making a sculpture.
Yes.
So you kind of think
yes.
of yourself in the middle as, you know, three is more like we're just a figment of this picture. We're not, level two is maybe a hologram, you know, level four is maybe painting in oils, you know. So it's kind of like you think of yourself as how you may evolve or how you may, you know, filter through and be able to see things. And then you think of level two. So now level two is more, you know, you understand yourself, you're with yourself, you create. So can you tell us a little more about level two and level one?
Sure. To me, level two and level one go hand in hand, because at level one, I know I'm a living being. I don't need a definition to know who I am. I'm the experience. So I am like the difference between me and my corpse, because one day I will die. But the difference between me and that body is that I'm alive right now to animate, to make choices, to make ideas, to create. I'm here. I'm alive. And I know it. And at level two, well, I can go in any direction in life. But when I say yes, I can use this energy. And what I'm using, describing it, it's like in physics one, it teaches that in order for an object to move, there needs to be a force that moves that object. Well, I am the force that moves this object called a body. And when I say yes, I'm going to use this energy to manifest something. And when I say no, I'm not going to use this energy to manifest anything. So we know it as will. This is free will. yet my yes and my no is the expression of my free will. So I can go in any direction in life, and all I need to do is to say yes in that direction. So at level two, I'm engaging that moment. I can engage a soccer game. I can engage this conversation. I can engage my wife and my kids. After I finish with this interview, I'm going to engage my kids. I'm saying yes to going in life in that direction. And I'm going to use what I know to allow me to make those choices. So at level three, that knowledge that I use to engage those moments defines me. But at level two, that knowledge does not define me. I define it. I give it meaning. An identity is an empty symbol whose definition is completely subject to my own agreement. If you want to find me in my identity, you'll find me in saying yes, and that would be level two. At the root of every belief I have in my belief system, there is a yes giving it life. There's nothing in my belief system I said no, because I'm not giving it life. I'm not giving it any power. I choose not to. The same energy I use to move my arms, to move my legs, is the same energy I use to make a thought. So if I understand this, see it from that point of view, at level two, there's a separation between my beliefs and me. My beliefs are only alive because I give it life, because I'm alive. So from that point of view, it sounds more esoteric and spiritual and philosophical,
mm-hmm.
but it really just comes down to the experience of being alive and being aware of it. And I look at you, I look at my wife, I look at my kids, and I see nothing but my equal, because they are a living being. My son, my daughter, they can be anything in life. At the age of 8 and 6, they still have all their life ahead of them, and they can go in any direction. Well, the only difference between my kids and me is that I know how to control this body, and I know how to control this mind, and I can still go in any direction. In fact, I've been tempted to go back to school to get my PhD, and if I choose to do it, then I'm going to go in that direction. If I choose not to, then I'm going to go in a totally different direction, but I'm alive, and that's the beauty of it. So level two is basically the direction I'm going to take in life, the choices I'm going to make. I'm going to go and vote, and I'm going to vote based on who I agree with and who I disagree with. It doesn't matter party or whatever. I'm going to listen to what they say, and if I like what they say, I will vote for that person. But I'm not restricted to voting for anyone else. I can go and go to college, get my PhD. I'm free to do it. And if I don't want to do it, I'm free to go in a different direction in life. So to me, preference is simply the direction in life that is my preference to live in and how I engage it. So at level three, my identity begins to color my choices for me. If I call myself a Mexican-American, then my choices will color the way I dress, the way I eat, the way I engage, the way I raise my kids. And at level four, I will use the Mexican-American and domesticate my kids to be the perfect Mexican-American. And at level five, the only truth is the Mexican-American, everyone else is wrong. But at level two, it doesn't matter if I'm Mexican-American or American, I'm a human being. And to me, that's the beauty.
Should we be in? So if you're looking at life now, and I'm saying at this moment, because things mm-hmm. change so drastically in life anymore, this moment, people should be moving from 2, 3, and 4, basically living in 2 and 3, or do you even think about the levels, or do you just say, I understand them and recognize when I might not be in my truth or in my path?
Exactly, that last part. That last part is exactly it. To me, the five levels of attachment are an instrument that allows me to become aware where I am at this very moment. Because before you mentioned it would take generations to move from level five to level three, and I would say that is truth, because we're just a few generations away from the Holy Inquisition. Just mm-hmm. 2 centuries from a removed from the whole Inquisition. So we've changed quite a bit. But mm-hmm. we now live in a time where it's in a matter of seconds. You know what alcoholics and drug addicts call the moment of clarity. At any given moment, we become aware of what we've created. So the levels of attachment are simply, I'm at level four, I'm aware at level five, I'm aware at level three. If I choose to stay in it, I'll stay at that level. But if I choose to let go of it, well, that's where it really matters. Because everywhere in life, we'll go up and down the levels of attachment. I could say I've had a good run at being a level two, and then someone posts something 2 days ago on Facebook. It made me go, grrr. And all of a sudden, I'm back up to level four. I'm like, grrr, and I'm battling and arguing and blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden, I'm going to bed angry. And all of a sudden, like 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. And I catch myself, and I realize what I'm doing. And I'm realizing the pattern. I'm like, oh, I'm at level four. I'm domesticating the people around me, and I'm domesticating myself to live up to this. Oh, yeah. And after that moment, from that moment of clarity, I start going down again. You know, it's like the image of someone working out. The easiest part of getting into shape is getting into shape. The most difficult part is staying in shape, because it requires so much awareness and that willingness and that motivator. Well, in life, we go up and down. So to me, where we should be is more about where I want to be. I want to be able to engage my brothers and sisters as my equals and co-create together in harmony. And at that point, level two and even level three to a certain degree allow me that opportunity. And at level one, well, when I first started writing this book, I really believe the holy people in our humanity are that expression of the authentic self. But as I started writing the book and I finished the book, I realized that even level five is the authentic self. The only difference is that they're not aware of it. They're so attached to their image that they're not aware of the authentic self. But the reason why the belief is so strong, it's because we give it that life. We give it that strength. We're focusing our energy in this one little thing. And if we become aware of that, we can easily let go. It requires that willingness. And at first, we're really afraid. You know, to become attached is to make something that's not a part of us a part of us by investing of ourselves emotionally. That's what an attachment is. So imagine you were born in the Soviet Union in 1960, grew up in that system, knew everything around it. This is the only way you've ever known life. Then all of a sudden, Gorbachev comes in, Perestroika comes in, Ronald Reagan comes in and says, tear down this wall. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's 1994, you have Boris Yeltsin and the Soviet Union no longer exist. Right. The thing about it is that one person in 1994 realizes that they're still alive and they can survive. But if they're so attached in 1986, it's very hard for them to see how they can live without this system. And that's the key. Everything in life changes. Everything flows. And when a cycle ends and we're still alive, we have a whole life ahead of us and we can adapt to it. And we realize that a thought only exists for as long as you believe in it. And like Neil deGrasse Tyson says, the truth exists whether you believe in it or not. But a belief only exists for as long as you believe in it.
You know, it's so interesting because I can remember, you know, just doing this show, a lot of people would say to me, how did you get those guests? Or, you know, you shouldn't be asking that person, you know, they're important. Or the PR people would say, well, what are your numbers? And I said, you know, look, here's just who I am, who is what it is. And, you know, we're just having a casual conversation. And they were, okay. And then it developed from there, you know. And that was just a perfect example of just letting it just be, just whatever it is. I mean, no, there is no tier system on this show. There is no politicking. There is no, you know, that kind of thing. And we just say, you know, show people where they are, show people how they can, you know, maybe make a few changes, or they would just celebrate what this moment is. And that's what we've done. So I think we've kind of, you know, on this show, almost reacted from a phase of the 2, 3, and 4, because that's where most people, I think, tend to be these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2, 3, and 4. Like, level 5s, they're a minority. They're very, very loud, but they're a minority. But even if, from that point of view, level 1 is every single living being. We're just not aware of it. So it's really where our attention is, where our awareness is. And, you know, I like that image of the flower. I'm like, it's I describe it briefly in my book because I really just began to enjoy it more after I wrote the book. You know, that's what one big thing they say is that after you write a book and you start sharing it, you can go back and you write it again and it turns out to be a slightly different book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of it. You know, that's the beauty of allowing an idea to flow. And all of a sudden it stops being an idea and it starts seeing something that, wow, it's something practical in my life. And the image of a flower that opens and closes and engaging and disengaging is a beautiful thing. So for me, I totally agree with you. We're the majority of us are at level 2, 3, and 4. And that's a beautiful thing.
You know, I think, too, a lot of people talk about the inner child. You know, let's picture yourself as your child before all of your life events happened. You know, that's how the mantra, you know, so many people uphold right now. And really what you're saying is bring forth your innocence before all of the other things got tacked on. In other words, all your other name tags were attached to you, you know. So that was really definitely an inner child was really a 2 just formulating into a 3.
Yeah, exactly. It's the way I see it is like the game of playing pretend. When we were kids, to play pretend was a wonderful experience because we were playing with a toy that was only in our mind, and we all came up and we made the agreements. If we want to play family or doctor or soldiers or whatever, we all got together. We all find out what our roles were. We use the information we know, the knowledge we know of that role, and we apply it and we engage it. And we would get mad at someone who didn't follow the rules. Like, hey, stay in character, stay in character. And it was fun because all of a sudden we're together in that world with our imagination. And then when the game is over, we're able to detach from that role and like, hey, that was fun, let's play again. Well, as we got older, we forgot we were playing. We got into our pretend world and we stayed in our role and we forgot that we're not this role. We are more than that. And to become a kid again is simply detaching from the role. It's like, okay, that was fun. What's the next game?
Definitely. And it's so much that you could just, I think we've just become more attuned to be able to sit back and look at things, whereas before people would look at their past with denial or anger or hatred or just tossing it out and casting it aside and not taking responsibility or even taking respect for it and saying, hey, that was cool. Did you see that? How many times I did that? You know, even if it wasn't something that was great, because you probably learned from it. So that's really important that we can now start to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And the key thing when we look in the past and we experience everything you just described or enlisted is forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because it's the thing that's going to allow us to truly let go. To me, the critical point of going from level 4 to level 3 is forgiveness. Because letting go of conditional love requires, one, the acceptance that I believed in conditional love and I forgive myself for allowing that to control me, for rejecting myself all those years. And to me, that's the key.
And, you know, you have it right on the last page of your book where it says, let us enjoy this moment in life. The listeners have heard this story before, but I'll say it again. I was working with a woman. It was her. It was end of life, but she did not know it. And I asked her what she wanted, and she said, I want to go see the heart doctor. And I said, why? She said, because I want to get a new heart from the transplant doctor because mine's broken. So I said, okay. And within 24 hours, you know, it was definitely, you know, intervention that we got an appointment with this doctor here in New Orleans from Paris. And we were in his office and sitting there, and he looked at me after looking at her records, just her and I were there. And he looked at me and he said, I would suggest that you enjoy today. And I understood exactly. I mean, there was just like this loud click in my head. I knew what it was about. And we left, and on the way out, she out of the room, ran the hallway. She stopped, and she looked at me. She says, am I going to die today? I said, not today. I said, but let's go have fun, you know? And we went, and we enjoyed that moment. That day, you know, the rest of that day, we drove around, and we looked at places she used to live, and she would tell us stories all day long until she was so exhausted. And then she did pass away, but we had, you know, looked at it, and we just said, you know, she was holding up so many hard things in her life. I don't know how my partner's going to go on. I don't know how I'm going to take care of it. We just bought a new car. What am I going to do? And I'm like, I don't understand that concept of what are you going to do? If you're ill and you're, this is your end of your life, does it matter about your car? You know?
It becomes irrelevant, yeah.
Yeah, and she just wasn't at the point of stepping into the point of what was relevant and wasn't anymore at that point. So I really think that is like the whole focus is right there. Enjoy this moment for whatever it is, no matter where you are on that tree, because it can change again in the next moment. But enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To me, that's the most beautiful thing about discovering our own mortality, that there's plenty of life to be lived between now and that moment, whether it's tomorrow, a week or a year or 75 years from now. My great-grandfather lived 116, so there's a chance I might do that too. But there's plenty of life to be lived between now. And the thing about discovering our own mortality is I discovered the mortality of the people in my life. The beautiful thing about that is that we are alive right now, and we choose how we want to make our life together, this relationship together. We are alive right now to make a change, a chance, an opportunity. We're here. The all potential that we have in life ends at a second. But there's plenty of life to be lived in that second. Let's enjoy it, like you said.
You know, and it's so important. You know, I live in Hurricane Katrina land here. We stayed for the storm. We shouldn't have. We got blocked in and everything. And you have also on the last page, home is no longer a physical place. Home is me. And I have on one of my websites on the front, when a storm comes, absolutely nothing matters but you. So figure out, and I try to help people say, who are you? What is important? And work on that. Because, you know, it's not about all of your stuff. It's not about how much survival crap you've got. It doesn't matter if all of your important papers are floating in this sturdy gray box. None of that makes any difference, you know. We stood on the corner with nothing. Okay, you know, what do we do now? You know, and as a wise shaman had said to me the other day, you know, we all have past lives, and everybody agreed. She says, well, then what are you worried about? You're going to come back again. You know, you came back before, you know.
Yeah,
and it,
exactly.
The realization is that it's just this moment. There is, we put so much weight into it has to something that we can't even be present.
Well, that's the result of conditional love. We can only love ourselves if I have those possessions, if I have those things, if I have that achievement. But in reality, to love myself unconditionally is basically if I lose everything, I still have the things that gave me everything. My hands, my legs, myself, my mind, I'm here.
Yeah.
That's what makes me rich. I can rebuild.
And to look at that, people have put absolutely no value in that. And I think that's where we're at in society right now, is what is the value of just being, or what is the value of me just standing here? And I think a lot of times, you know, lately in healthcare, people are getting hit with cancer, they're getting hit with no insurance, they're getting hit with whatever is out there. And they're saying, oh, that's taking me down, it's this, that, or the other. Maybe that's just all of your exoskeleton going away, and then whatever is there is there. Your spirit is still there, right?
Yeah, your spirit, your heart is still there, most definitely. You know, like, energy cannot be destroyed. It can only be transformed. And if we lose this body, when we let go of the final attachment in our life, it continues. I'm not sure what happens after we die, but the beautiful thing is that I'm alive, and I'll find out in that moment. But while I'm alive, here I am.
That's right. And, I mean, that's all you have is that moment. And it's so difficult to get anybody to to get people to understand, but then we can't always get them to understand. They're going to have to come to that realization on their own. All we can just do is set an example of what we feel or believe, right?
Yeah, exactly. All we can do is a perfect mirror because, like I said before, I only control to the tips of my fingers. I say my words, but I have no control whether people agree with me or disagree with me. And that's beautiful because I only control this living being. And I only carry the weight of my choices. But I'm a co-creator. I co-create with everyone in my life. I co-create this society. I co-create this family. I co-create. I am an equal partner in everything I do.
Well, goodness, can you believe we made it through this hour? We just burned through that time. We didn't even breathe.
Woohoo! Yeah. And I haven't heard another thunder, lightning.
Oh, yeah. I have. My dog is sitting underneath my legs, shivering.
Oh.
So we have about 2 minutes left. Would you like to give us just information about your book, where it could be purchased, or how to find out more information about you and the books both you and your father have written? That would be wonderful.
Sure, thank you. Yes, well, my name is Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. You can find our website at miguelruizjr.com or even my dad's website at miguelruiz.com. And the 5 levels of attachment and living a life of awareness, you can find them at your local bookstore through IndieBound or Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's out there. It's great, and you can also buy it as an iBook. And for us and what we do, to me, the whole point of all this work is to enjoy life. And whether it's our book or our music or your favorite band or your favorite teacher or your most favorite pet, whatever brings a smile to your face, that's the whole point of this life, to enjoy it, to take a step, take a breath, and live every moment. So I thank you so much for the beautiful opportunity.
Thank you so much for being with us. It was an absolute pleasure. And I think we've really taken it, you know, your topic. Sometimes people say, I kind of understand it, but I'm not kind of. So that's why I always like to do these shows, because we can take it around full circle and say things many different ways so people can grasp the concept and, you know, help themselves each time and be inspired to listen, you know.
Yes.
So
yes.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Gallagher. It's a real pleasure. And enjoy the rest of the storm and be safe.
Oh, I will. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks. Thank you. You too. Have a good one. Thank you. Ciao.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
So if you'd like more information about Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., his book is The 5 Levels of Attachment, Tolic Wisdom for the Modern World. And it is on today's show page, the link to his directly to his website, also the link where you'll be able to purchase his book. Thank you so much for being with us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher and Sedona Talk Radio and Blog Talk Radio Internet Streaming. It has been a pleasure, and I hope you will join us again another day for another topic where we take a great guest, and we just kind of have casual conversation, you know, what other people might be thinking. You know, not everybody has all the answers, solutions, questions even. So we kind of like to talk and have a great conversation. So thank you so much for being with us today, and have a great day.